Hello, I'm April Jones, and we at Jones Law Firm care about you, your family, and your well-being. That's why we've put together this informative webinar series to answer your questions about life, about the law, about your family. So thank you for joining us, and let's get started.
Hi. Hey, everybody. Welcome. 12:30. Let's get started. This is our next episode in our webinar series, The Coronavirus, COVID-19, Your Family, Your Finances, and Your Future. I'm April Jones. If you don't know already, I've been an attorney 29 years. I've been the CEO of Jones Law Firm PC for 20 years, and we have been serving Colorado for 20 years. So we are excited to be here. We do family law exclusively. And today we are having a paralegal tell-all. So this is something that's different, but we get a lot of questions for our paralegal, for our front desk. And so I thought, why don't I bring on my fantastic paralegals and staff, and we can talk about the questions that they are asked most frequently. So they did prepare some of the questions that they get asked most frequently. But also feel free, same as every other seminar, to type in your questions and we will get to those as well. So let's get started. Let's try to use the time we have here wisely and get your questions answered. I have Monica Cody. She is our amazing senior paralegal and she has been in law since 2011?
Correct.
So Monica's here to answer your question. Have Delaney Hill. She's also a senior paralegal. She's been in law. She's been with us. She can answer your questions. She's amazing as well. And we have Rachelle. Rachelle is our front office legal administrator. She handles billing. So she's going to answer a lot of your interesting questions as well. So let's go ahead and get started. My first question, oh, here's one. This was, what is a paralegal and what do they do? Monica.
Sure. So a paralegal is going to be a person with knowledge of the law and legal procedures who provides support to attorneys regarding your specific case and your legal needs. We're going to assist with conducting that legal work, including drafting motions, legal research, and also talking to you about your case.
All right. How soon can I be divorced after I file? Delaney.
So Colorado has a mandatory waiting period of 91 days, so you can't get a divorce decree before that.
That is correct, 91 days. So if you agree on every single thing, and we filed all the paperwork day one, because we agree with the other side, and Monica or Delaney drafted all the paperwork and both sides signed off on it, and they did their separation agreement and their financial affidavit and all the documents the court wants, you still have to wait 91 days. So that's what a 91-day waiting period is. Obviously, if you file for divorce and you don't have all those things ready, your divorce will take longer than 91 days. But that's just the soonest under Colorado law that your divorce can be final. Why do I have to exchange financials? Raise your hand if you've been asked, why do I have to exchange financials? Okay, it's unanimous. Even Rachelle has been asked, why do I have to exchange financials? Rachelle, what do you usually say at the front desk when you get that question?
I say, let me get you to someone that can answer that question.
And when it's Delaney, what do you
say? So it's just a court requirement to exchange financials so that the parties know everybody's assets and that the division can be fair between the parties.
Absolutely. Anything you want to add, Monica?
No, I think Delaney, hit it on the head. The court just has that requirement so you're aware of all of the financials of both parties going in so they can adequately divide debts, assets, and things like that.
And in fact, if you don't properly and fully and honestly disclose your financials, there is, under the Colorado statute, the case can be reopened under certain criteria. So you don't want to have that be the case. And courts are very reluctant to move forward without having financials. So it's just an important component to your divorce process or your child support type process. What is a retainer and why do I need one for a lawyer? That's a Rachelle question. How often do you get asked that?
Not often, but I do think there's a miscommunication with people about what a retainer fee is.
Okay.
So I understand why that question came in. But basically, a retainer is used to secure services. Most attorneys require one up front. Usually it's discussed and we come to an agreement and some type of contract is drawn up with the firm. Once that agreement is signed and that initial retainer is paid, that's when we start the official representation. And then that retainer is used to essentially pay for the work that is done on your case. During our billing periods, we accumulate fees, and that is what we use to bill. And that's billed against that retainer fee. And that, so basically whatever is used during the billing period, if there's like $200 worth of fees, that's billed against the retainer and taken from that and moved over internally.
Now our retainers, is there ever a retainer refund? And what's the criteria for that?
Yeah, so basically when the case ends, that's when we can issue a retainer refund. So basically, if there's some fees that weren't used in the process of getting your case figured out, we return that back to you because that's essentially not ours. We didn't earn it. So we say, hey, this is what we have left in your trust balance. Let's go ahead and get that back to you.
So I saw somebody say on Facebook, you know, I've never had an attorney give me back my retainer money. Do we give back retainer money?
Yes, we do. We give it a lot.
We are happy to do it.
We're excited.
Yep, we are. That means your case was taken care of, your bill was paid, and we were able to get you what you needed and get you your money back. So absolutely, Jones Law Firm PC, we refund retainers every billing cycle.
Yep.
Okay. Once I serve someone, let's start with how do I serve the opposing party in my case? Monica.
Sure. So once you have the documents to go ahead and serve somebody in your case, there's a couple different ways you can do it. You can contact the sheriff's department to go ahead and of the county that you're trying to serve somebody and have them serve it for you. You can hire a private process server, which is generally what Jones Law Firm does. We do hire somebody to conduct the service for us. Or you can have somebody who is over the age of 18, not a party to the case, also fill out and serve those documents.
How often do we do that?
Pretty often. So you do have to serve somebody anytime you do file for a divorce. So pretty frequently at the beginning of your case, you will be serving somebody, but there are some other court procedures that also do require service of documents. Contempt charges are one of those that you do need to serve that paperwork to the other party.
How is service being effectuated during the pandemic?
Yeah, so there has been some, you know, private process servers that are not conducting service at this time, but we have found that the Sheriff's Department has been serving other parties, specifically if it is for protection orders, those are still being served by the Sheriff's Department.
Can I send over the signed copy and get my documents notarized for me? So who all is a notary of all of the four of you? Everybody but me. There's law firm members. All right, notaries. And okay, so Delaney, can they send the documents over and get them notarized for them?
Unfortunately not. Notaries have to be in person with the person they're signing for, and they have to sign in front of the notary. There is a new law right now where you can do it over like Zoom. I haven't done one of those yet, but typically you have to be in person with the notary.
And that Zoom law is like, what, 2 weeks old? It's really
dependent. Yeah, it's really new.
For the pandemic, they had to come up with something so that, you know, the life could continue legally. And so there is that online Zoom option. Have you done it yet, Monica?
I have not either, no. But they do also require that the person is in Colorado. So if you're a Colorado notary, then it does, that person does need to be located in the state of Colorado. And it just does need to be done through an audio video communication, so Zoom or something like it, like Delaney said.
Okay. Are the courts open? I saw that on Facebook. Are the courts open? Monica, are the courts open?
To handle emergency matters, yes. They don't want you going down to the courtroom or to the courthouse and filing things right now. But we are able to still file things on your behalf, and the courts are still issuing orders. We are still getting responses from other counsel. But the courthouses right now are not, unless it is an emergency matter. But like I said, they're still working. It's just not having you actually come down to the courthouse to file things and be present. A lot of things are moving to occur by phone as well.
That is correct. And emergency matters would be motions for restriction orders, motions for protection orders, those sorts of like really emergency matters are still being heard in Colorado. And cases, if we file documents, the court is still responding. It's just the court is, like the court's working from home. So if you file motions, you can get responses to your motions, and because the court is working electronically. But they do not want you coming into the courthouse for non-emergency matters. But we are fortunate in Colorado, if you have an emergency, you can file with the court. So that's just really important to know. Do you agree, Monica?
Yes, absolutely.
Have you had to file any emergencies, Delaney? Or for protection orders?
I think I've done like one or two.
In the pandemic?
Not too many of them. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
What about you, Monica?
Yeah, I've filed a couple, and we've done a motion to restrict as well. And that hearing, even though it was an emergency, still occurred over the phone. So if you do have concerns about going to the courthouse, even in an emergency, depending on your case, they also might still hear it by phone.
Okay. So different court, you know, we have multiple courthouses in Colorado and the different counties. So everything's not happening exactly the same way, but my team knows what's going on, and they can get everybody taken care of in the right way. So that's still happening. Do I get billed for emailing my attorney? Rachelle, do people's retainers get charged when they email their attorneys?
Yes, for the most part, they would be when it's regarding your legal matter. If it's something like scheduling, that might not be a billable charge. Typically, that's going to be handled by myself or one of the paralegals, but we'll just go put it in the calendar. But if it's messed with stuff that is about your case, then yes, you're going to be billed for it. Depending on the email stream, it might be very small. It might be like a 0.1, and that we can go into a little bit later, but it won't be as expensive as if it's just one email, but yes, you will get billed.
And the thing with the email is a communication. Do you know what someone could tell me in an email? And
yep, you're going to have a lot of important information there.
Yes. So, you know, an email, it sounds like, I mean, think about it. An email is a lot.
Yes.
So the communication, and then you want us to do stuff. So we're on it. We're handling it. It's all part of taking care of your matter. We do that by email. We do that by phone. We don't do it so much by letter anymore, but it used to be writing letters. And
every once in a while, we'll get a letter.
Michelle does the mail. Do we get letters?
We do every once in a while. It's some attorneys just don't like emails. So they'll send a fax or an email or a actual letter. So just like emails, we would bill for that, but that has the information that we need to make sure we're taking care of you. So that's why.
We still get faxes?
We still get faxes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Good to know. due to the stay-at-home orders, will my initial status conference proceed as scheduled? Monica.
So it depends. Kind of like we've talked about before, it depends on the county you're in. We are seeing initial status conferences get moved to the phone, just because a lot of times the main part of the initial status conference is really just scheduling future dates and deadlines. So a lot of magistrates and judges are moving these to occur by the phone, or they are getting rescheduled depending on your county and who you're in front of. But some are still proceeding just by phone.
What is an initial status conference? Do you guys get that question all the time? What's an initial status conference? Okay.
Yeah.
What's an initial status conference? What do you tell people, Delaney, when they say, what's an initial status conference? Or what do they think it is? Like, what? Tell us about that.
A lot of people think it's the final hearing in their case and everything is decided at that. But it's actually just like a meet and greet with the judge, and you kind of just go over a roadmap for your case and set deadlines and determine the issues in the case. So it's pretty brief, just a meet and greet.
Monica?
Yeah, I agree with Delaney. So same thing. A lot of people think that testimony is going to be given and witnesses will be there and we'll bring all of our exhibits, but that's not the case. It is brief. It's sometimes before the magistrate or the judge, or sometimes they use a family court facilitator who really is just there to, like Delaney said, roadmap your case, figure out when those financials are going to be due, if you need to take a parenting class, things like that. So it's not the final hearing in your case. It's just the beginning.
It is just the beginning. Though sometimes, depending on how it's held, the court, if it's held by the judge and you have some, I call them quick and dirty orders. You have something that you need to get taken care of immediately and the court wants to entertain it. For example, what if your newborn was taken and not handed back to you and you were the sole parent the newborn's entire life and we just got to court? I would ask the court to order that there be some parent, that the parenting be adjusted so that you had your newborn back in your care. So, or if you didn't have any money because the other person took all the money out of the account, you had nothing, you were standing in front of the court, I would bring that up to the court then. But that's not what, the initial status conference is just typically a meet and greet for the court to take the temperature of the case. And like both Delaney and Monica said, most of the time, at least what half the time, it's not in front of the judges handling your case, I would say. It would be in front of the facilitator. So, case-by-case basis, but that's why you strategize with your attorney. I think it's really important. You know, sometimes people think I'll go to the initial status conference because it's not a big deal, but if you go to the initial status conference and you come back with what I'm calling quick and dirty orders, we have an even longer road ahead of us. Do you agree, Monica?
Absolutely, yeah. And same thing, you know, at that initial status conference, if there's something that needs to be handled, they might set like a temporary orders hearing to address, you know, parenting time or financials if they're not able to handle, you know, your issue right there at the initial status conference. But you would get back in front of the court to address those issues that need to be heard before your final hearing.
Yes. Can I get divorced without ever going to court? Delaney, can you?
I think I've seen like maybe one or two like that, but typically no, you have to go to court for it. Yeah.
So it depends too on what you mean by can you go to court? Because, you know, I get that question. I might get that question at the grocery store, not these days because I'm not talking to anybody at the But that's like one of those quick questions from people sometimes. And it depends on how you meet it. Can you divorce yourself? No. You need to have a judge say, you are divorced. Now, what's the process for that? Can you file all the papers and not ever have to step foot in court for that, for the court to sign the papers? Yes, like in the scenario I gave you where I said, what if you filed everything all in the beginning, everything the court needed, and you didn't need to go to court? You could file without going to court. How would you manage the initial status conference in that case, Monica?
So yeah, I agree. So generally, a lot of times you will have to attend that initial status conference to get that court date. So let's say you get the permanent orders hearing date set, but you guys agree on everything and you say, hey, here's all of our paperwork, we're good to go, we just need to wait those 91 days. If both sides have an attorney, then you can file the right paperwork and the court on that 92nd day will sign off on everything. So a lot of times that's just a waiting period. Some courts will schedule that permanent orders hearing just in case. You do need that if you're not all, everything is all settled. It just, like you said, April, it depends. A lot of times you will have to attend that initial status conference, however, whether in person or by phone, whether or not you need a final hearing or not.
So to Delaney's point about how she, it's happened, but she doesn't see it happen that often, you really have to plan it. You'd have to say, this is what I want. I don't want to ever go to court. And so I'm going to take these steps. You say, Monica, hey, I don't want to ever go to court. Tell me what I need to do so I hit all the buttons, all the right boxes so that I don't have to go. Like it would have to be a deliberate attempt and management of documents to not go.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So they have basically a list of all the documents you need to file in order to not go to court. So that's something that we here at Jones Law can help you roadmap your case so that you don't have to go to court if that's something that you're able to do, if you guys are in complete agreement on everything, to just go ahead and check those boxes that of things you need to file to be in compliance for the court to sign off on that decree without having to go into the courthouse.
Can the opposing party bring anyone with them to mediation? Can they bring their parents? Can they bring their new significant other? That's a question you get, Delaney?
Yeah, I've had that one before. And if both parties are in agreement that other people can attend, then they can. But if you say, no, I don't want anyone else at mediation, then they can't bring anyone.
And sometimes that'll actually happen. You get to mediation and somebody brought their girlfriend, boyfriend, best friend, and they come into our side and say, is it okay? And I say, no. Because a lot of what's happening is private. Your financials are being talked about. You're being talked about. You know, it's your private, personal situation. So we typically will say no, in which case that person typically will have to sit out. The person won't be able to be in the room. And typically, they'll just wait outside. And so when the mediator goes back and forth, they'll go in the room when the mediator's gone and come out of the room. Now, sometimes everybody wants to bring a best friend or a boyfriend or... And so everybody says yes. So it depends, but Delaney is correct. Let's see. When filling out my financial statement, do I complete it with my current financial information when I lost my job, or do I complete it with what I expect to make in the future? How do you get that question a lot about financial affidavits? Monica?
Yeah, so a lot of times, especially now with, I know there might be a change in your hours or your employment status. So I get a lot of questions on how they should fill that out. You do want to fill that out with your current financial information. You can always revise your sworn financial statement in the future if something changes. So when you file that and you sign that sworn financial statement, it should be current on the date that you're filing it. So if you have, you know, recently lost your job, you would fill it out with where you're at right now. And let's say in 3 months you find a new job, then you would update it with that employment information.
What even is a sworn financial statement? Sworn financial statement, Delaney, do people ask you that?
I've had that one a couple times as well. But it's basically just this. Sorry, what was that?
What is it?
It's just a court form, and it just lists all of your assets and debts and your income and every financial thing you could imagine. And then there's also a form that goes with it that has the required disclosures. So those are all the supporting documentations that you have to provide to back up what's in your sworn financial statement.
What documents do I need for a sworn financial statement?
So bank statements, pay stubs, asset debt spreadsheets, just anything related to your financials, pretty much.
Do you get financial statement questions, Monica?
Oh, yeah. that's a big one that people have a lot of questions on. You know, a lot of the questions on there, you know, talk about budget, you know, things that you have to pay every month. What do you spend on groceries? What's your rent, your mortgage, you know, your vehicles? Do you have a vehicle payment? I think a lot of people get very flustered when they first look at the form. You know, it's like 7 pages. But know that as you break it down, a lot of the stuff they ask you are things you already know. You know, who do you bank with? What kind of car do you drive? Do you have a car payment? How much do you spend on gas? So although it looks intimidating, it's really not. Just you have to just kind of break it down. I know Delaney and I are always available to answer those questions, but also just to walk you through it. I have clients that want to just go through it on the phone and we can fill it out together as they have questions on their financial form. But know that it's not super intimidating once you go through it, but we're obviously here to help you if you have those questions.
Yeah, I used to tell people, just fill it out. If you don't know something, just skip it. Like a multiple choice test, just skip it and come back to it. But you talk to Monica, talk to Delaney, talk to me, your attorney, and we'll help you fill it out. Because don't you find that they'll get to some question they can't answer and then just stop the whole project until they talk to you or just freak out?
Yeah, absolutely. So like April said, you know, skip it and move to the next question. You know, the court also doesn't expect you to go through and tally up what you're spending on groceries every month. You know, things like those questions can be more of, okay, yeah, generally I spend, you know, about $100 a week on groceries. So, you know, then you change that into what you're spending monthly. But questions like that, whether you need to, you know, have your exact amount or, you know, maybe more of an average, that's why we're here to help answer those questions for you. You know, you want to have your exact mortgage amount on there so that you, that's correct. You know, you want to look at your pay stubs and figure out what you are paying for your taxes every month. But again, yeah, that's why we're here to walk you through it.
Does my petition for dissolution of marriage need to be notarized? Does it, Monica?
It does not anymore. So it used to, but the forms have been updated and you do not have to have the petition for dissolution of marriage notarized anymore.
Which is really interesting. You know, for the first 15, 18 years, you ran around getting signatures when people file for divorce and now you just don't.
You just sign it and you date it.
Yeah. So much easier. Sign it and you date it. Which documents do require a notarized signature?
When you are doing like a waiver of service, if you're saying, hey, I received those documents, but I don't need to actually be personally served with them, I'll agree to sign a waiver saying I received a copy. That does need to be notarized. Same thing as if the person is who serves the documents, it's an affidavit or a return of service, that needs to be notarized. A verified motion, so if we're going to file something in your case that's verified by you, then we would have that verification most oftentimes notarized.
Okay.
But same thing, foreign financial statement no longer has to be notarized. That was something that was also changed.
Right, that changes. That's a game changer too. Think how many sworn financial statements you were sending across, waiting for a signature. The signature notarized. So that's good. That's helpful. It lets the process move forward more freely. I mean, people getting divorced have a lot to worry about, a lot of things that they do need to get bogged down with. And it's nice that the court, that they were able to change some things to just make it a little easier to get through the process. Can we pawn the engagement and wedding ring and then split the money? Is that a question people ask? Delaney, you've been asked a question.
I've actually gotten that one a lot recently. And unfortunately, it's considered a gift, so it can't be split.
Right. Your ring is a gift. A gift is a gift, right? So if you think of a gift being a gift, I mean, not everything in law is like what you just said, but a gift is literally a gift. And so it's that person's type of property. So you can't take it back and split it. People have been wanting to take back wedding rings for a long time, or especially if it's a nice one and you haven't married that long, or you just, the person kind of wasn't very nice as a spouse and you want the ring back, it's a gift. You don't get the ring back. Now, if the person says, hey, let's sell my gift and I'll give you half the money, then you're free to do that. But that's not the fact pattern I think Delaney's referring to.
No.
Can't say I gave it to you and now I'm taking it back, because that's like taking back a gift and you can't. Okay, let's see. We're getting short of time. Let me see what there's some good ones left on here. When do I tell my spouse that I want a divorce? Is there a single answer to that, Monica?
No, there's not. You know, we work with you on what we feel is the best time for you. You know, we obviously also want to take into account any safety measures that you might need to think about. But it really is case by case on when's the best time to bring it up to your spouse. And a lot of that time might come from you also when you're ready. Again, if you're having doubts or you want some clarification about your specific case, that's something that we could help you out with.
What if I change my mind and I don't want to get divorced? Do I have to get a divorce, Delaney?
No, so you can file divorce and you can withdraw it at any time.
Do we often have clients say they don't want to get divorced? Do you ever see clients, the two parties change their mind?
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah. Monica, you?
Yeah, definitely. I've had several clients that we've had in the past reconcile, and everything, you know, goes back to how it was, and they withdraw and move on.
That's right. If you don't want to get divorced, just like you told the court you wanted to get divorced, the two of you can tell the court, you know what, I don't want to get divorced. Your orders, temporary orders, if the case is dismissed, they no longer exist. That's the nature of a temporary order. You, like Monica said, you go back to life the way it was prior to filing for divorce. So we encourage clients, if that's what you want to do, like I've had other lawyers on the other side say, you know, they should get divorced, they shouldn't change their mind. And I liken that to like somebody telling you that at the beauty salon. It's your business. You would change your mind. Change your mind. It's your business, it's your family, it's your children. So at Jones Law Firm, you don't have to worry about that. If you think you can reconcile and you want to go and live your life and move forward, and you can do so safely, do it. And
you can even just put your case on hold, and you don't have to totally withdraw it, but you can put it on hold for, I think it's 60 days or 90 days, and then decide from there.
Any comments, Monica?
Yeah, I agree with Delaney. You can put it on hold. You can withdraw it. You know, if the other side does not want to withdraw, then that's a different story. But if you guys are both on the same page and wanting to withdraw the divorce, the court will allow you to do that.
And keep in mind, this isn't a question, but this is just something I'd like to let people know. When we talk about divorce during these pandemic times, the divorce rate in China skyrocketed when the pandemic was over. The divorce rate skyrocketed so quickly that they had to put a limit on the number of filings per day in China. So I'm really like to stress, you know, don't let your marriage be a divorce statistic because of the pandemic. Pandemic conditions are hard. They're hard on everybody. They're hard on a lot of people. So, you know, if you need to get some marriage help right now, do it. If you need to like take a break and, you know, meditate, read a book, go for a walk, Google, how do we get through this? Do it. You know, it's much cheaper than calling us. Do you agree, guys? Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if what you need to do is dissolve your marriage, we are here and we will help you. But if you don't need to, there's plenty of people who don't have a choice. And the other thing that's happening is domestic violence is skyrocketing. So we have a domestic violence resource. Please take a look at it. It's on our website. You can call the divorce hotlines and they will point you in the right direction in Colorado. Our shelters are open. They take dogs and children, pets. There's vouchers you can get to stay in hotels for, you know, a month. They can get you housing so you don't have to stay in a domestic violence situation. And in fact, our governor has said the stay in shelter rule does not apply if you are being abused. So that's something you need to know. And then you can call us because, as Delaney and Monica have said, the courts are open for emergency matters. So that pretty much concludes our time today. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Delaney. Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Rachel. And thank you, everyone. Be good. Be safe. Stay well. Tomorrow, we are having tomorrow's Take Control Tuesday, and we are having Arlen Moore. He does a lot with mindset and with leadership and with how to live your best life. So he's tomorrow at 12:30. A week from tomorrow, we are having Beyonce's dad, Matthew Knowles, talk to you about mindset and how to just take control and be a leader in tough times. So thank you for listening, and we will see you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this webinar. If you or someone you know would benefit from watching a recording of this webinar or any of our other webinars, they can be found at denverdivorceattorneys.com. Thank you, and keep a lookout for future live webinars, and I hope to see you again.